Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte. Episode 39, recorded January 3rd, 2012. Darren Heath. TWiT Photo is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWITPHOTO1. It's time for TWiT Photo. Welcome, our first show of the year 2012. We're going to kick things off with a big bang, but first let's say hello to Catherine Hall.
Hey, Leo.
Good to see you.
Welcome
our
back.
Our host and photographer. Thank you. I missed you.
I missed you, too.
Missed doing the show.
I know.
Yeah. Did you have a good New Year?
I had a great New Year.
You were dancing on the stage, you told me.
I was. I made up for the last two bunk New Years, so.
They weren't bunk. You spent the New Year in contemplative mode the last couple of years.
Yes.
With your grandmother and a beautiful in nature. This time,
year I shook it up.
You shook it up, baby. Catherine's website is catherinehall.net. She blogs there, has a post of the week every week.
And check out what's on there today.
Look at that. We are the best new tech podcast on iTunes in the list.
Selected one of the top three.
Along with the Vergecast, which is really good.
Congratulations on TWiT for once again being nominated.
Best
technology podcast.
Frequently get in there.
Yeah. So, we posted about this today, and we just wanted to say thanks to all the viewers.
Well, it's good, because this is a new show.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't know about it yet, and we want to make sure everybody does know about it. I'm very proud of it, because I love doing it, because we get to talk with the best photographers in the world.
Yes, we do.
About the art, truly the art and science of photography. In fact, I'm very excited about our guest today. Do you have a post of the week before we are tip
no,
of the
I
week
just
before
did the
we,
rewind.
Just the rewind.
Just
yeah, we're just
wanted to,
celebrating
to thank everyone for tuning in and supporting it. And
that's great.
All of that. So.
So Darren Heath is very well known for one thing, and one thing only.
Yes.
Taking pictures of very fast cars.
I know.
Darren, welcome to TWiT Photo. It's so nice to have the Formula One photographer.
Thanks a lot. It's very nice to be here. I'm very flattered. Thank you.
Yes. You're based, well, I'm sure you're all over the world because you have to, how big is the circuit? How many races do you cover every year?
It's 20 this year coming. It was 19 last year, and I've been shooting it for, this will be my 24th year.
Holy cow. And is it every week or is it every couple of weeks? How close together are they?
It's generally every couple of weeks, but with 20 Grand Prix, obviously, they're shoehorning in more races. And we get a lot of what we call back-to-backs, where we go from one race straight to the next.
Amazing. We're going to have one Formula One race in the U.S. this year. Just one.
We are.
And when is
I hope
that
so.
One?
Yeah, we all hope so.
It's not built yet. It's they're building the track in Austin. There's one I see in Montreal. You've got Rio. You've got Japan. You've got China. Germany, Great Britain, all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fun. That
it's
must
a lot
be
of traveling.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic sport and a wonderful life. And I never tried to lose sight of that. But it's immensely flattering to be paid a decent amount of money to photograph racing cars.
And I thought on your
fantastic countries.
Darren's website, DarrenHeath.com, on his front page, he has a quote from Ansel Adams, which kind of, I would think with race car photography, really is apropos. A good photographer knows where to stand. A good photograph is knowing where to stand. When those cars are going by at 100, 200 miles an hour, it's where you're standing is important.
Yeah, out the way. I'm not just a photographer who likes Formula One. Obviously, I'm a photographer who likes to photograph anything, and I get a lot of inspiration from photographers outside of Formula One, almost more inspiration from that. And heck, you can't get much better than Ansel Adams, can you? So
it
sums it up in one sentence, really.
Well, there must be some significant technical challenges to taking these pictures. I mean, these cars are going. You're not moving along with the cars; you're standing still.
Yeah, but it's a philosophy, really, to just to try and get across in one's photography, the power and the excitement and the assault on the senses that Formula One is.
Yeah.
It's a tremendously visual sport, a real colourful sport, trying to use light and shadows and, trying to get a human element. There's so much of the sport, which is, especially as the drivers that get ever more and more cocooned in the cars for safety reasons, obviously, it's trying to pull out the fact that there are, at each Grand Prix, upwards of about 3,000 people who follow this crazy circus around the world, and it's trying to show a little bit of that. But the essence really is trying to show just the power and the excitement and the just the forces that are unleashed by these incredible machines.
Tell me what for the Americans, I think, are not known. We're a NASCAR country. Tell us what is Formula One racing? What distinguishes it from, let's say, NASCAR, you know, Indy 500, IndyCar kind of racing that we're used to?
I guess in essence we know how to turn right, or our drivers know how to turn right, but it's a left foot top. But
they're not going around in a circle. The tracks are very complex, looped, often through cities. The Monaco Grand Prix is actually through Monaco, right?
It is on streets that are a lot narrower than the ones we're used to in the States. I guess around San Francisco, where you are, it's there's some pretty narrow streets there.
But, we need a San Francisco Grand Prix. We could do it here.
We could do it here.
You so do. You so do. That would be a place.
Throw them down Lombard Street.
Oh, I would love that.
That would be fascinating.
So it's certainly challenging for the drivers. I'm not going to say NASCAR or Indy racing isn't challenging. But it's
like every discipline, isn't it? It has
different
skill sets you have to bring. But there are guys like Juan Pablo Montoya who did a great job in Formula One who have gone now to NASCAR and are doing a fantastic job. And, it brings out the same skill set in a way. But I guess the difference, to answer your question, the difference is the Formula One is a circus. It's it's full of politics and egos and lots of different people trying to climb up the ladder. One of the ex-team bosses described it as the Piranha Club. It's dog eat dog, you know. It's all the cliches, and I think when we came to Indianapolis a few years ago, we were introduced to the local people in Indianapolis as I heard one presenter announce us as those glamorous Europeans are here.
Yes,
which made us all raise an eyebrow because we don't think of ourselves as that glamorous. But
I think though,
I guess there is something of that
here in the States, especially because of Monaco, which is the kind of the flagship Grand Prix. We think of it as almost a royal sport.
Well, I mean, the engineering behind it aren't with NASCAR.
It's elite.
You have Jaguar and McLaren, and I mean, what's the difference between NASCAR car companies and the Formula One?
NASCAR is almost like a silhouette formula, isn't it? In that you each car is they're not really allowed to get much better than each other.
Right.
I understand that if someone wins three races on the stretch, they'll have the car taken apart and found out what they've done
and fix
pulled
it.
Back.
And fix it, yeah.
And fix it. Well, in Formula One, it's not like that. It's the greatest minds in the sport just pushing ever harder to find loopholes in the laws and try and have no limits. And the lawmakers always trying to pull them back, but always trying to chase the geniuses who designed these cars.
That sounds like so much fun, I have to say. Now, there must be some severe technical challenges. You mentioned already that one thing is you can hardly see the drivers at this point because of safety rules. So even though it's about personalities very much, it is. Yeah. But you do great jobs of taking pictures of the drivers after the race or before the race or just with champagne pouring over their heads.
Beautiful portraits.
There must be some – so these are portraits. These are classic portraits. But there must be some real challenges to the pictures of the cars in action. That's a great shot.
Tell us about the thing that gets me is his ginormous lens. So what lens are you using and how are you panning?
I guess panning is – I used to stand in my bedroom window at my mother and father's house and practice panning on the cars outside as signs of a misspent youth, really. But if people ask me, when people ask me, I equate it to a golfer's swing. It's just being as smooth as possible. It's panning with the car. Once you've squeezed the shutter and the shot is fired, keep panning with it. You know, you don't see a golfer hit the ball and stop, do you? He carries on through, and it's all about the emotion.
So you're matching in effect, and we've all tried this. Every amateur photographer like me has tried. Oh yeah. So you're matching the speed of the car as it moves, and you get this great speed effect. The car looks like it's fairly crisp, and in fact this one's perfect. And then, but the rest of it is just, you know, a blur.
Yeah, you're trying to as I said before, you're just trying to get across the biggest part of the sport is the speed.
Yeah, and it's clear here. Yeah,
yeah, and it's but in that shot, which is a shot of the British Grand Prix last year, which we had this brand new, that building is called the Wing because it's supposed to be like a wing of an old World War II aircraft, and it's trying to use what's around you,
right.
use the things, and picking the car up, and being aware of its acceleration. It's braking, because obviously if you start picking a car up and you're panning it into a corner, you've got to slow down at the same speed as the car to keep it sharp.
You've got to really know what's happening here. This is another example of using the track as a big part of the picture.
Yeah, when we turned up at the Indian Grand Prix where that was shot this year, last year, the inaugural Indian Grand Prix, I always take a walk around the circuit, checking where the track of the sun during the day relative to the car's direction of travel. And you're looking for creative opportunities and lines painted next to the track. Right. Obviously, every photographer makes a beeline for those places, and then you try make as much of it as you can.
It is unlike Indy racing, though. There is a lot of variation because the track goes winding through a lot of different areas. So you do have to pick your spots, don't you?
How do you pick your spot? I mean, and how early are you getting there? What sort of thought process goes into that selection?
I guess it's experience. You've got many of these circuits, and you know, I might have been to, I don't know how many Monaco Grand Prix I've come to, 23, 22, something like that.
So
you obviously go to a circuit, and you know what pitches work. So, you know, you might. I try to do have a gap between pitches, if you like. But when you go to somewhere new, you're looking, as I said, for the relativity of the car to the sun,
right.
The backgrounds, the grandstands, where the most people might be. I meticulously plan a route around the circuit particularly for race day and for qualifying, just because I work on my own. So you're just trying to cover as much of the circuit as possible.
So you don't pick one spot. You're going to move around throughout the race and look at different shots.
Yeah, as many angles and shots as possible. It's each time you get to a corner, it's trying to get as many pictures out of that corner as possible, and then get into the next one or the next place to stand, as Ansel Adams would say, as quick as you can.
I love this one because, as with most of the many great photographers, you stand where the other ones are not standing. You're on the other side.
Well, that's a. I was obviously one owns luck, I believe, and I was pretty fortunate there that you're trying to steal the flashes of the other photographers.
Right,
so
right.
Make a note of that was the first Korean Grand Prix that we went to, and it went on so long because of rain that it was almost dark. And I knew that the other photographers, obviously, when Fernando Alonso, who's just about the best guy for celebrating, when he got out of the car, that he'd do that pose, and then you're hoping, we call it stealing the flashes. I'm not using a flash myself, I'm trying to steal theirs.
Yeah.
And you hope to get one or two.
Yeah, it's timing.
Six or something, so I was very fortunate.
Wow.
You have great access. So what about the people that are in the grandstands or trackside and are not available to be in the pit? What can they do to get more creative, more engaging imagery?
It's interesting that I get a lot of tweets and I get a lot of emails from people asking exactly that. But you'll notice that or those guys that certainly places like the Canadian Grand Prix, the photographers, all the professional photographers who do the Grand Prix circuit, will go into the grandstands, particularly at somewhere like Montreal, because you can get fantastically different shots using the crowd in the foreground in a slow pan, cityscapes. People, I think, and I understand it, but there's a general misconception that I must get trackside.
Right.
But a lot of the time, one is trying to get away from that and trying to get distance between you, because you can imagine that it gets repetitive, you know.
How many pictures of a car going around the track can you get, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I was taught very, very early on to tell a story of a Grand Prix weekend. So we used to, when we shot transparencies, you would have a pack of generally about 24 pictures, and one would fill that pack up with strong action, front three-quarter action, rear shots, portraits, but also you would try to get in there some wide-angle lenses, stuff of sunsets or grandstands, or we call them fillers, and I still do call them filler pictures, that you've got your real impactful work, but that the clients want to see and that magazines might run on the cover, kind of thing.
Right.
But then you've got all the icing on the cake, you know, the pretty stuff.
The backstory too.
Backstory, exactly. Yeah. And I think people, when they send me their links to their sites or I went to the British Grand Prix and this is the pitch, these are the pictures I took, I'm always kind of, you know, don't be so obsessed. That's a perfect example. I'm standing in the pits outside the Red Bull garage. Opposite is a grandstand. It's a Korean Grand Prix this year. And it's fantastic architecturally. I'm quite interested in architecture, so maybe I'm looking for those type of things. But it's massively underexposed to try and accentuate that shape.
Yep.
And the silhouette, yeah. So, and that shot is perfectly doable by someone, you know, a similar shot within that grandstand.
I'd be standing in the pit saying, I got to get all these great close-up shots because I'm in the pit. And you're looking, oh, look over there. I love it.
Yeah.
That's a great artist. Looking for that unique point of view. And this is a fantastic shot. I just love it. We're talking, this is fun. We're talking F1 racing with the king of F1 photography, Darren Heath. In fact, his Twitter handle is F1 Photographer. So I know it's true.
He's great on Twitter too, and really great blog.
Oh yeah,
he chronicles each trip. Well, why don't you tell us about your blog?
The blog really is. I enjoy it, and it's taken on a life of its own. Really, the reception has been fantastic. I'm very flattered by that. But it's really trying to. The origin of it was that a great friend of mine who works at McLaren suggested that I should do it. I have opinions, like many people within the sport. And also my website, guys, to get your SEO up, so you're higher up on Google.
You've got to have some text, don't you? Yeah.
You've got to have some text. Yeah. So photography sites generally do badly because obviously there's no text. So what do? You fill it up with text. So I started writing a blog about 3 years ago and really enjoy it. And I just try and focus on things that maybe a photographer sees or hears. We're often in a privileged position that the camera often acts as some kind of barrier where people don't think we can hear what they're saying or see what they're doing, that kind of thing. And it's just trying to bring across, there's no point in me writing about things that the journalists are writing about because that's what they do and they have knowledge far greater than mine on the current stories. So one just tries to bring out a different side, really.
Now, lest you think Darren is just, panning along, taking that picture. It's so easy. You just put, here's the lens.
Yeah, I know.
The lens you're using.
That.
Now, you use this all the time?
What is this lens?
It's that's a 600mm lens.
And
which
it's,
is,
and it's probably, what, F1.8 or something.
Do you know what I appreciate about the shot?
What?
Not just the lens. But
it's got his name on it.
Look at what's, that's pretty cool, too. But look what's on his right shoulder.
A Canon.
He's carrying another camera.
Well, you can't have that lens on every camera.
Nobody has these ginormous cameras. Which, by the way, how are you using a monopod, or how are you? Someone tweeted Ernest did. It was very hilarious. He goes, does he use a monopod, or does he just have massively big guns?
Well, obviously, I have big guns, whatever they are.
But, both.
But yeah, I cheat and use a monopod. It's you can't. That's a 600mm lens, and generally, you're carrying that all the time. It's a pretty.
How fast is that? I mean, I'm looking at the barrel. It looks like the aperture must be pretty big.
It's f4.
F4. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's pretty fast for daytime anyway. I mean, you're.
Yeah, and any bigger. Honestly, yeah, you wouldn't be able to carry it around because
it's huge already.
As Catherine says, it's you've got the 600 over the shoulder. You've got a 200mm. I don't use zoom lenses, so
They're all primes.
Which means that obviously I'm carrying more.
Why don't you use a Zoom?
It used to be because of the quality issue was part of it, but as the quality has come up massively with Zoom, so that I don't think that's relevant anymore. But it's really goes back to the Ansel Adams quote that if you use a Zoom, you're just zoom in and zoom out.
You're not moving around. Yeah.
Not moving around. So I found that using prime lenses makes one move to the picture or move away from the picture or choose a different lens or choose a different viewpoint. And that's really the basis of it. And generally, I'm not saying that people have come to my opinion, but I think there's been a move, certainly within some of my colleagues, to go that way because, not because of anything I've done, but because I just think that fashions and photography change and people want to maybe get away from just that simple zooming in and out. Not there's anything wrong with having a zoom lens, but I think most of the time you use a zoom at its widest or its most extended. So why not just have two primes?
I think I can read between the lines. People who use zooms are lazy.
Lazy.
Yeah,
just going. Me too.
Yeah, they do look a bit.
No, my favorite lenses are primes, though, and I have
my
to. It's a good discipline. The reason I have a 50mm prime is somebody said this is a good discipline. Learn how to do that. Learn how to frame your photo by moving around, and I love it. And now I have that 85 prime, and I just love it. And so you're a Canon shooter, Darren?
Yeah.
And
I've been a Canon shooter since when they brought the EOS equipment out in 89.
We're going to do an ad and come back and talk more with Darren Heath, who is a Formula One photographer. Wow, you got about 20 questions. I'm going to stop. I'm going to shut up.
These are just here as background. It's better to be conversational.
I want to go to Monaco.
You want to go?
Why don't we do a photo walk in Monaco?
See, you say this to me, and then you get me excited.
Yeah, and then I never do it. That's my MO.
Yeah,
I go, no, we can't afford that. We won't be doing that.
Because I go, oh yeah.
I want to do that,
and then I get really excited.
Well, I found out. I talked to Alex about Rwanda, and it sounds a little primitive.
Oh, you actually did follow up.
Oh no, we've been talking.
Leo.
Sounds a little. It's going to be. It's a little scary, primitive. I don't want you to get sick again.
Oh, I want to go. Don't worry about me.
Really?
Yeah.
Because we could go to Disneyland instead. It's a lot cheaper.
Are you worried about me or are you worried about yourself?
I'm worried about myself. I'm an old man. I can't get sick. We only have one ad anyway. So we're going to get back to Darren Heath, our photographer, our F1 photographer, in just a little bit. We're getting him back on the line. We have a little technical snafu. But before we do, let me talk about, every single photographer we talk to these days, including Catherine, you got to have a website. You got to have a website. It's not only a brochure. It's how you communicate with your fans, your audience. Building an audience is so important. It's how you build your name. It's just important to show your pictures. And somebody who's doing this for a living, like Catherine or Darren, of course, is going to spend a lot of money getting a designer to do it. Or you could save some money. You could go to squarespace.com and set up a gorgeous website. Lots of photographers use Squarespace. I mean, a ton of them. If you go to squarespace.com, in fact, right now, you could take a look at the portfolio page of many great artists and photographers who use Squarespace. Just go to squarespace.com, and where it says examples, click that link right there, and you'll see photography is one of the choices. These are all professional photographers who use Squarespace and make great-looking sites that show off their photography, show off their skills. You would never know that this is a kind of a canned website, but it is. Squarespace.com. Click the Try It Free button, and you can do this yourself and get a great-looking site that looks just super pro and very affordable. Squarespace is the hosting and the software to do everything you need. It's optimized for beginners, but if you are a CSS expert, the sky's the limit. JavaScript too. Hundreds of design templates to start with, and you can customize them fully. There's a great iPhone app, an iPad app, and an Android app that allows you to update your Squarespace site on the fly, check comments, see the stats too. And of course, if you already have a website, you want to import, it supports import and export from Blogger, Movable Press, a movable type WordPress, and a TypePad. So it's very easy to get in and get out. You're never trapped. A form builder, so you can collect information from prospective clients. You can even use Flickr and other social networks to display your photos or your tweets right there on the website. Just, this is the best thing. Go to squarespace.com. See this big green try it free button? You don't need a credit card. All you need is the name of your site, a password, and an email address. You can have for 2 weeks of the complete Squarespace to see what it can do for you. That's the best way to do it.
And you'll spend about the 20th of what I spent.
Yeah, don't believe me. Those of us who have hired website designers look with envy at Squarespace users, I got to say.
We're going to, for our app that we're creating right now, we're going to use a Squarespace site.
Good.
Yeah.
Try it. I think you'll be amazed. Squarespace.com. Now, we do have a special offer for you after you try it. You got to try it first. If you decide you want to buy, if you use a square, if you use a special offer code, which is, I think, have it right here. TWITPHOTO1. Number one. TWITPHOTO1. You will get 30% off for the first 3 months. Wow. TWITPHOTO1, 30% off for the first 3 months. Free to try, though, as always. Squarespace.com. And use the offer code TWITPHOTO1 when you decide to buy. I just think they're the greatest. I was just looking at this giant
lens.
Have
you ever shot motorsports before? Then?
No. My son plays lacrosse, so I shoot lacrosse. Uh-huh. And I use the 7200 with a one and a half extender.
Okay.
So I get 300. And that's enough for lacrosse because I'm on the edge of the field. But it's a similar problem, I think, probably to what Darren experiences with the Formula One races. They're wearing all this protective gear. They all look the same. Yeah. So you're always looking for that one shot where they're kind of walking towards you and you can actually see their faces. Because you really do want that personal touch. You do such a good job. Welcome back. We got Darren back, I think. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Gremlins and Machine.
Oh, don't get me started. That's a Skype thing.
It is.
But you do such a good job of capturing not only the excitement of the race and the cars. And by the way, and I should show some of these images too, you also do amazing image pictures of the cars themselves, the motors, the parts, the gear. I love this shot. I don't know who this is. I'm sure you do. But
it's Fernando Alonso. It's the same guy that was photographed with the flashes behind.
He's very expressive, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He's fantastic. He thinks a photographer colleague of mine told me a great story where he just started getting to a winning car and wondered how he should celebrate. And the PR lady from the team and my photographer friend told him, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. And ever since, he's done a fantastic job. And you know, the more pictures that people take and the more the TV cover, the better for the sponsors, better for him, better for the team. And, you know, as photographers, we're monumentally upset and downbeat when guys don't perform well when they get out of the car and they've won or they're on the podium. It's our world champion, Sebastian Vettel. He's not very good at all for photographers. He does the same thing every time. He's poor on the podium. It doesn't make you dislike the guy, but it's just give a little bit. Just,
you want
just
more. Yeah.
Bring it. You know, bring it and we'll show everyone.
Yeah.
So Darren, you started going to Grand Prix before you were born.
What?
In mommy's belly.
Wow. Come by it honestly.
His passion is obviously evident with his work. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got into Formula One photography?
Well, getting into it was, as you say, it was kind of in the family, for want of a better word. My granddad was a grass track racer many years ago at the circuit. And I was going with my parents when I was very, very young. And so I guess I always had an interest in it, I was aware of the sport. And growing up watching the great English, British drivers of the 70s. And once I discovered I liked photography, it was really just a case of marrying the two. And then from about the age of 13, 14 years old, deciding, right, I want to be, when I'm older, considered as one of the best photographers of Formula One by my peers, by my colleagues, and everything since then, not everything, but certainly everything professionally and a lot of my private life has been to be now sat here talking to you about
it.
Wow. That's I think with any sport or any profession, you know, one needs to have a passion and that will show through.
It's great, though, that you knew what you wanted.
Yeah.
And you did it.
Yeah, I guess it's an alien concept to me that people don't know when they're quite young what they want to do. You've got to spend most of your life doing that, so you might as well work out pretty quickly what you're going to do.
Right.
I guess I was fortunate that I found what I had a talent for and made the most of it. And I think that's so much in one's professional life about what it's all about and carrying that through.
So you have, your grandfather has history and you've grown up in this sort of Formula One environment. Why photography? Why not drive?
Oh, interesting. Did you ever want to drive?
Yeah, well, like all little boys, I guess I wanted to be a race car driver, an astronaut, a fighter pilot, right. You know, all those kind of things. But I guess it was realism. I think it's important to know one's limits and boundaries and what you can strive for realistically. And I remember like it was 10 seconds ago, the time that I decided, you know, you can hang up these dreams of being a racing driver. It's just not going to happen. But you know you can take photographs. You know where that's at, if you like, and that's an achievable goal. And so it was really going for that, and getting through my school and getting enough qualifications to go to college, going from college to work in a black and white darkroom, and then proving to that my then boss that I was worthy of going to races. And you start in the junior formula, work your way through that, and then obviously the goal is Formula One. Like all sports, that you know, to get to the pinnacle, and it's a case of proving that you're worthy of going to that. And then once you're there, it's trying to stay there. And personally for me, never dropping the quality, never letting the younger guys snapping at your heels to surpass you.
You guys, though, probably, I mean, how does it work for Formula One? I know in American sports, there's a sideline and the photographers stand on the sideline. I'm sure it's not the case in Formula One racing. Is there a photographer's area? How does that play out?
You're pretty much allowed to go anywhere around the circuit. We have a pass system and a tabard stroke jacket system to be identified, and you're allowed to go pretty much anywhere you like within reasonable boundaries. And
you can't run out on the track, obviously.
You can't run out on the track, and that's understandable.
Right.
You know, they're pretty fast, these cars, and when they do shunt, it's like light aircraft crashing into walls.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be in the way of those.
No. It must be a little scary sometimes, though. Have you been?
Yeah, that's what I know. Have you ever been at risk? And what's the worst crash you've ever seen? Am I allowed to ask that?
Well, I'm. There are some photographers who chase crashes, go to places that they may well find crashes happening, but that's not my bag, if you like. I've had some near misses in that cars have shunted and wheels have come over barriers where been standing. Not 30 seconds before, and you, you know, there but for the grace and all that. But I'm not fatalistic. I'm not superstitious. I just get on with it. If a wheel hits me and does me damage, then that's that. But you obviously you're always trying to be aware of the direction of the cars, who's fighting who on the track, so there's a potential for touching. You're always trying to have your eye on what they're doing. Certainly at places, you know, you mentioned Monaco. If there's a shunt there, and there will be one day a big one where someone comes off, and they could conceivably go through a shop window or into a yacht.
God.
Or,
yeah,
but you have to be aware of that. But you know, that's all part of the sport. That's all part of the buzz of and the excitement and the reason that a lot of people watch it.
Is this Monaco here where the boats are so close to the track?
Yeah. I'm on a yacht, on a client's yacht, and. It's qualifying for, I think, the 2000 Grand Prix.
That and it's horrible.
It was awful. It was awful, Catherine. Yeah, awful. Spent 2 hours on someone's yacht, but obviously I was working hard. And it's trying to get across the craziness, the commotion of the place.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's a cruise ship. There's yachts. There's all the people in the grandstand.
Yeah, and the small car. But obviously, you don't need. That's something that I was saying earlier. You asked about people wanting to get in the pits and next to trackside. Well, this is a shot that anyone really in that grandstand, because they've got the view the other way with the city in the back or the town in the back, but they've got all the boats that one of which I'm on.
Right.
And they could get a similar shot. Well, look how small the car is, but it says it says everything about Monica.
Totally. Totally a scene setter. Yeah.
So what about getting your great, you showed us those spots at the end where you have great access. How are you getting those positions right next to, how much are you fighting to get in right next to the drivers?
Yeah, there must be, is there a whole core of people, the photographers?
Yeah. Yeah, there's at each Grand Prix, there's about 55, 60 of us who do every Grand Prix. And with local photographers who are allowed in, it fluctuates, but it can be anything up to 100 photographers. So in those end of race moments, you're you sharpen up your elbows and you get ready for a right old good fight to get the shot. And it's not something that generally I have to get involved in, because as you say, I'm trying to maybe step back and show the fight and show the driver in that in that situation, show that celebration. But sometimes it's a wonderful buzz to get in there and you know, you're bashed around and cameras in the side of your head and bashing into team members. And you never really know what you've got until you walk away and look at the screen. And that's when you're either smiling or crying. But,
one of our chatters, who's Stephen, is in Belfast, he says he'd heard that if you do not get a certain number of photos published, you could lose your accreditation as an F1 photographer. Is it that competitive?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a criteria set. Stephen is right that... generally, I think last year, one has to have 240 published pictures in the editorial publications that are out not more than a month after each race, which is a lot. But
that's a ton.
That's a ton.
Yeah, it's but there's some great new guys at the FIA, which is the organization that runs the sport, who are aware that the print industry has changed so drastically and will keep changing. That it's a goal and parameters that are set that are just not achievable anymore because one
there's not that many magazines.
Yeah, the magazines.
No, and I shoot a piece for BBC, the BBC website. That's one picture that they use after each Grand Prix. That's potentially 3 million people or visits who look at that. Well, how do you equate that to a magazine?
Right.
In you know, it's,
with 20,000
circulation. Yeah.
So is most of what you do editorial?
Yeah, pretty much. But you have to do, you do commercial stuff for working with teams. But the criteria that we're just talking about for
forces
getting
you
to pass is editorial. Yeah. Yeah, that's the basis of what
Did Ferrari pay you for this
one? That's what I'm wondering. Who are your clients?
I love this one. Yeah. That's beautiful.
No, they didn't. Other people have paid me to use it, obviously, but... Now it's that's a good example of what we were talking about before, of just getting out there and not thinking about the cars. That's taken in year 2000, I think, at Monza, which is one of the greatest racetracks on the planet in Italy. And they park the team trucks that they don't use in the paddock in a wood between two sections of the track. And early in the morning, one gets dew running down the side of the trucks and. That's the sun rising as a reflection.
That's beautiful.
So it was just me walking around amongst the trees trying to find pictures, and there's nothing more iconic than the prancing horse and sunrise.
That's right. Look at that.
And I've never bettered it in 11, 12 years since. I've never taken one nearly as good as that.
Now, that's film.
That's film, yeah.
Transparency?
Velvia, yeah. I was a
Velvia.
Total Velvia nut, yeah.
That has a unique look, doesn't it, Velvia?
Beautiful, yeah. It's an incredibly saturated colors. I remember the first time I saw it. Another photographer had shot it, and it made me think of biting into the ripest peach that you've ever bit into, and just that sensation of just color and taste and contrast and I didn't shoot anything else after that. That stuff came out.
Do you feel that you're now with digital that you've come close to that capability? I mean, there are even Velvia filters, of course, but
those don't quite. Yeah.
They're not the same. But I mean, are you able to kind of approximate what you got with the film on digital?
Yes. It's a good point, and I resisted going to digital for a long time, probably for a couple of years too long, if I'm honest. I stayed with film, but in a way, I'm glad I did, because it meant that when I went to digital, a lot of the problems have been ironed out.
Yeah.
The cameras were fantastic file sizes, and you know, internet was great, and I got an understanding of I think there's a real benefit that I didn't appreciate, just to be technical for a minute, that when photographers, I think, resisted going on to digital, but quickly when they did, certainly in my experience, realized that it came to photographers who had a grounding in darkrooms and a grounding in
yes.
you know, using color printing, black and white printing processes, because all Photoshop is basically being in a darkroom
right.
on your computer screen. And if you shoot raw, you can bring everything out of. I don't understand these cameras really, or people will tweet me and say, "Have you got this as you just said, Velvia filter, or this you know effect on the new Fuji camera, or that kind of thing?" If you shoot raw, you can do everything
right.
that you want to it. You can make it look like Velvia, Kodachrome, Ektachrome, Neopan, any film that you've ever shot 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I have to say, you've mixed in this portfolio that we're looking at, the film and digital. And while I fancy sometimes I can tell,
yeah,
I think I'm sure I'm often wrong. That looks like film, for instance.
That is film, yeah.
See, Leo, you yeah. got it.
There's something about the grain. I don't know. It's just something.
It's an organic feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not to sound too cliche, but it's almost like people who just want to listen to vinyl will besmirch
right.
MP3 or CDs, you know. Right. And it's I kind of miss film, but not really. I'm just right now selling and getting rid of my old film stuff, which is a bit of a wrench, but
I bet it
I just
is.
Feel like I'll never shoot it again.
I bet it
I
is.
Can't, I can't get rid of it.
And see, this looks digital to me.
That looks digital.
It is, yeah.
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 So what about, yeah. we've talked a lot about
enough of that. By the way, great picture. I'm not saying anything bad about it at all. It's
oh,
a,
come on,
it's
Leo.
A quality. I love this image.
No, it has a feeling.
And it's kind of almost like trying to find the Playboy bunny on the cover of Playboy. I always try to find the car in Darren's pictures. And there's a car in this one, too. I love it. It's great. That's a
yeah,
great
somewhere.
Shot. Somewhere. Great shot.
So we've talked a lot about access. What about when it comes down to your favorite people out there?
Maybe favorite people. Do you mean the subjects or?
I'm being sarcastic. Maybe it's the security.
I have a big problem with security.
No, come on. They're there to help.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, I've had a few run-ins with American security. Don't you worry. But it's there seems to be in this world that we live in right now. The last 10, 12 years, there seems to be a kind of a lack of appreciation that there are some of us been doing this sport or you know our jobs for a very long time and security come along and tell you can't stand there, you can't do this, and there seems to be a lack of understanding that perhaps we know the rules a little bit better than you do, guys, because we're not there to break them, and I've got to shoot the next Grand Prix. I don't want to break those rules. But
I think anybody with a lens that big, you should get to stand anywhere the hell you want.
I think you're right. You can come with me to any race.
But how do you handle that when, if you have a security agent or somebody that's harassing you or telling you to move and you do have the right?
I personally try and stay calm. I don't suffer fools gladly and I don't have a lot of patience. But that obviously can go against one if you're kicking off, as we would say over here, in that situation. Especially, generally, it happens when the cars are going round. You can't be heard.
Right.
You look like you're about to explode with annoyance. So it's just trying to just make them understand. Or generally, what I try and do, if I feel it's going to be that kind of problem, I either don't go there or I go there early in the weekend so that they're a bit unsure. And there's maybe less photographers in the forbidden area, if you like. So by the time they've worked out that photographers shouldn't be there, I've got the shot in the bag. So you know, there's ways to play it, but I've generally worked out that it's not worth the stress and not worth the aggro. I'm not getting any younger. So.
We're talking the legendary F1 Formula One race photographer Darren Heath. DarrenHeath.com. Brilliant stuff. And he's got some tips for us. Shall we go through his tips?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Starting with tip number one, we've all heard it before. The rule of thirds.
Yeah, the rule of thirds.
Although those aren't thirds I see on the screen there. You're doing the golden mean, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess it's known by different I don't know, names, isn't it? I've always called it the rule of thirds. I know you can break it up into even more components on the screen, but it's just a basic compositional tool and rule in photography that governs, well, in photography and painting and art and sculpture in so many different creative fields. I really just think it's something that every photographer,
yeah,
anyone who wants to be a photographer, needs to understand. It's not hard to understand, but it's something that should just come naturally.
Well, you've got some examples here of using the rule of thirds. So tell me what's going on here. What how did you compose this?
The natural way to compose that, I guess, Sebastian Vettel, who's the sports world champion at Abu Dhabi this year, he's being interviewed by a journalist who's to the right. And I guess one would naturally, if you were just to take the picture, put his face in the middle of the frame, maybe get the yachts that are in the background in focus and just try and show the scene. But it strikes me as a far more interesting picture to blur out the background,
yeah,
put his face up where the intersections cross, because basically that's the fundamental of the rule of thirds.
That's the point interest there, right there.
Yeah. You're trying to put the point of interest or the focal point that you want people to photograph on one of the intersecting lines.
Something interesting, almost breaking a rule here, because, I mean, normally wouldn't you want to put it on the left-hand side so that he's looking into the picture? You have him on the right looking out of the picture.
Yes.
I guess it's a good point and one that that actually a few people have
I love questioned it. It works.
But it's once you know the rules, you can break the rules,
right,
Don't you?
So
you make it work for the particular shot. So the shot, if I put Sebastian on the left-hand side, he might be looking into a dark space,
right,
whereas that highlight, which is just to the right of his right eye as we look, is really nice, and it mirrors the highlight on the left hand side,
mm-hmm,
and mirrors the yellow of the red ball on his left shoulder as we look, and those are all on lines. And but as you're taking the picture, you're not generally thinking about
this. You've internalized all this.
It's intuitive.
Yeah, it should just come naturally.
Yeah,
it should just come naturally as soon as you pick the camera up. A journalist, a great journalist by the name of Peter Windsor, he once said to me when we were on a shoot in Spain, do you, and really you could think of it as a bit of a silly question, but he's not a silly man, he didn't mean it like that, Darren, do you compose the picture before you hold the camera up or when you've got the camera to your face? Well, obviously you do it beforehand, because you don't walk around with a camera to your face all the time.
I do.
So you're... Well, I guess I should, but you know what I mean.
No, you're better than
not
I.
Not with a 600 millimeter.
You know what I love about this is because he's looking out of the frame, it's more contemplative. It's it looks like he's thinking about something instead of looking at something.
Absolutely. I was just waiting for him to stop talking. And Sebastian Vettel talks a lot to his great credit, especially in interviews. But you're just waiting for him to stop, close his mouth, and just for that split second look contemplative.
Yeah.
And you might, out of shooting 50, 60 pictures, you get that one. I think I got two in that 15 minutes of shooting. But that's enough. You only need to show one.
It's the shot.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room said he's thinking about whether he paid his F1 insurance or not.
Yeah. Well, he's world champion, so someone else does that.
Somebody pays it for him. Here's another example. You know, typical punter like me would center that car right in the smack dab in the middle. But no, it's going somewhere.
Yeah, it's going somewhere. And like you said before, he's going in. Maybe you would say he could put it on the other side of the frame. But if I put him on the other side of the frame, you lose that spray.
Yeah.
Because he's turning away.
Yeah.
He's turning right, but left as we look into a corner. So you use that spray as a creative tool to blur out the background. It's with a very long lens, a 600 millimeter with a 2x and a 1.4 converter.
Holy cow!
So you're really, really struggling to get it sharp, but obviously you don't get that many. But the photographer's mana from heaven for photographers is when you get sun on a wet track, on a just post the rain track, and that's
you get the reflections below, the mist above. Now you're shooting at f4. What is your shutter speed for this? It must be very high.
In that's pretty almost full sun. So I guess I generally shoot 100 or 200 ISO. So I guess that would be
maybe 1,000.
1,000 to 2,000 maybe. Yeah. You know, you're trying to give yourself a little bit because it's 5.6. No, it's F8 actually.
F8 because of the double. Yeah.
Because of the extenders,
Do you find that certain apertures are better with panning?
Yeah, not so much the apertures, Catherine. It's the shutter speeds. And different photographers within the sport who use maybe Canon or Nikon and different types of cameras. I use 1DS Mark III. Some of my colleagues use 1D Mark IVs. But the new 1DX is coming. And it's a case of finding what shutter speed works well for you. For me, with film cameras, it was always around a 20th to a 30th to get that really fast or slow speed, fast car speed panning effect. With the 1DS Mark IIIs that I'm using, it's generally a 13th or an 8th.
Wow.
Now that's...
Wow.
People, I don't think generally believe that. But I don't.
Wow. You must have those rock steady hands.
Years of panning out of my bedroom at home.
I mean, that takes incredible skill.
So no kidding.
What can people do? You mentioned before practicing. What are some things that people can do to practice before they get to the race?
Practice some more. Yeah, go to the gym. No, I don't know. I don't know about going to the gym. Just be as smooth as possible in when you're taking pictures.
Go stand out on the highway.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Did you really?
I used to go and shoot trains in the summer holidays for my schools. I used to go down to the train lab.
Well, that would be fun. Actually, I'd love to do that. Now, let me ask you about focus. Are you using the automatic focus? Are you manually focusing on a point? What are you doing?
Well, generally, one has to, as you probably know, on the kind of pro cameras, you have custom functions which allow endless amounts of customizing it to where you want things to fall within your hands or what you want certain buttons to do. So the lens is always set on AF, but one is manually focusing. But you have the option that if a car suddenly starts spinning or a driver falls over in the pit lane in front of you, some you want to get a grab shot quickly, you have a back button, which was naturally where your thumb sits.
Yeah,
where you can just turn around, zip the focus in, because it's, you know, whatever photographers say, you're going to be quicker with autofocus than you are with racking it through manually.
So you're using back button focus, not focus on the shooting on the picture button, but on the back button.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when I borrow someone's camera and you pick it up and they've got different custom functions, it's like you don't know how to drive.
No one can take a picture with my camera because I use back button. I started
because
and I love it for this very reason. Yeah. You can do a pre-focus, and then you get it roughly, and you can take a lot of shots in that range, but you can always refocus if you need to.
How long did it take you to adjust to the back button focus method?
It just seemed like a natural thing, as Leo is saying. It's you could just reconfirm all the time. You can reconfirm and then recompose. You know, and with these cameras now, they get ever better in allowing one to move the focus sensitivity point around the screen side. So you can, you know, with the joystick on the camera, you can move it without moving the camera. You can move the sensitivity point. But generally, you're manually focusing, but just using the confirm button, if you like.
Right.
On the camera.
I got that tip from this show. I can't remember which photographer it was.
Steve Simon. So if anyone wants to check that episode out, he gave some...
I tell you, change my photography.
Yeah, I haven't done it yet.
I love it.
I think I'm lazy.
It takes you 2 days to get used to it. For a while, you're going, wait a minute, nothing's happened.
Yeah, the problem is I go out and shoot. Usually I'm doing a job or something.
But you're doing a lot of portraiture. It's great for portraiture.
I'm sure it is.
Anyway.
It is. It's like using a mouse with the wrong hand.
You get used to it.
I keep saying
a few days and bang.
I'm not lazy.
You're there.
Tip number two. And I love this, but I want to know what you mean by it. Don't just take a picture, make a picture.
it's really trying to make guys appreciate that, especially in a digital age. I think people just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot, and there's no cost element to it anymore.
Right.
Once you've got the hardware and software, it's too easy. It's with film, there was more of a, you know, this shot is going to cost me money, if you like, and it's. You know, the shot that you're showing is his early morning testing at the Barcelona circuit a few years ago.
This just takes my breath away.
Thank you.
God, that's gorgeous.
And it's trying to, you know, don't just shoot it. Think about what you want the end viewer to see. As all photographers, all we're trying to do is touch the people that will look at the picture now or in the future. And it's just trying to get that across, that, you know, you want to invoke emotions of excitement.
Sure does it.
Despair or adulation or whatever it is.
This is about hope. This is pre-race hope.
Well, you're spot on, because it's testing and they're hoping their car works.
Yeah. Do you must get there at dawn and stay till the end. I mean, the race is only a few hours, but you're there all day, I would bet. I mean, this is an early morning.
That's a testing, which would have been, we've got our first test in February, first week of February this year in southern Spain. So all the photographers will be trying to, a lot of the photographers will be trying to get the new car pictures and the different drivers that are in the cars this year. And some of us will be trying to get this kind of shot, which is a little bit more emotive.
Love it.
And stands the test of time a little bit. Oh, you know, you wouldn't know. That could have been shot last week.
That's not
but
a
it
news,
was shot
news, yeah.
10 years ago.
Yeah. Jersey Fudge, who is from the Isle of Jersey, where they make fabulous fudge, wants to know how many shots you take. He's a fellow Brit. Wants to know how many shots you take during the course of a day.
Course of a day.
What's your ratio?
Yeah, over a weekend, I will shoot about 9-10 cars. So I guess over a day, I'll half fill maybe a 16 gig card. Two. It's not. It's not a lot. Some of my colleagues will shoot 10-15 cards per session, but I shoot raw. So obviously that's
40 megs a shot. You're filling it. Yeah, it's a lot of shots. It's 1,000 maybe.
Yeah. You're probably 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 maybe. It depends on someone like Monaco. You'll shoot a lot more than you say will at the German Grand Prix, because it just looks a whole lot nicer. And
right.
People want more work.
More to see. Do you use the burst mode ever, or are you shooting one at a time?
Yeah, generally one at a time, but obviously one has that, much like the back button, you have the custom function set up that you can you use the burst. But with the larger file cameras, like the 1DS Mark III that I'm using, it needs time to buffer. So you get a crash or you get a shunt, or particularly the start, I'm really trying to, maybe you'll have a short three-shot burst, then see what's unfolding. See if a particular driver is moving into shot, another three shot burst, you know, giving the camera the time to write the file, because there's nothing worse than when a car hits another car and starts rolling in front of you and your camera's, you know, spinning around writing those shots you've just been taking.
Here's another shot that tells a story, and this is not a telephoto. This is pretty wide, almost fisheye.
Yeah, that's what it is with a 15mm fisheye. Yeah. It's the Ferrari driver Michael Schumacher, then he was Ferrari. It's just 2006. He just announced that he was just about to announce, but we had a pretty good idea that he was retiring from the sport.
Wow.
He's since come back, but it was, he won the race, and that's a shot that I'd thought of, I don't know, weeks or months before, that when he wins his last race, or potentially his last race, just trying to get across something of the.
Look at that!
If it happens at Monza, the majesty of it.
Oh yeah,
and
the Italians go crazy. Yeah,
they do. Yeah,
you have such a keen attention to detail and showing the micro and the macro views of things, and also always capturing light in such an expressive way. But it's a moving sport. I'm wondering, how are you able to consider all these things with such a non-stationary subject?
Well, look at this. This is a still life. Just gorgeous texture and color. And this, you couldn't get more.
Oh, I mean, this is incredible. Talk about attention to detail.
You couldn't get more.
Well, that's
action.
I'm glad you pulled that up. That's possibly my favorite picture of last season. It's just, it's the Canadian Grand Prix, and we had a monumental downpour just as we were all going to the grid. And the cars come out and they do practice starts. And that's what he's doing in a Toro Rosso car. He's doing a practice start. And what I was trying to do, that's with the 600mm lens, you're trying to get those water droplets. So you're focusing, you're shooting when he's unsharp, if you like, but you're trying, you obviously don't really see those water droplets.
You don't even know where they are. You're just trying to find that plane of focus. Yeah, and you did.
Yeah, you're trying to find it. And there's a, that shot, there's a real, even though he's unleashing, I don't know, 800 brake horsepower, and he's spinning up the wheels, and there's a monumental noise. There's a feeling of stillness and calm
exactly,
there.
Yeah.
That I
love that. Love that. One more tip, and you were talking about light, Catherine.
Yeah.
He's a master.
Yeah.
Of course, as every great photographer must be, but I just love this. This is
it's
a great
It's harder
one.
Because he's not in a controlled environment. It's right. not like setting up models.
There's no studio here.
So
yeah.
How are you doing this?
Well, it's interesting you say that, and I'm thinking before the show about questions you might ask. I, if I'm perfectly honest, I struggle with when I've got control. I'm something of a control freak in many areas of my life, but I don't like it when I have a situation and I have, you know, moving the driver here or here, and I have control. What I like is trying to get as much out of that random environment that Formula One is. So that's on the grid at last year's Japanese Grand Prix, and Vettel can potentially win the world championship at this Grand Prix. So he's obviously in his own fantastic, you know, his own zone.
Yeah.
But he's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic, Vettel, in that you can be right in his face, and he just zones out. He doesn't worry. There are other drivers that push photographers out of the way, get involved in scuffles, and all around me are 20, 30 guys all pushing around trying to get you know the shot that they're after. Or there's TV crews and there's his team all around, and I'm just striving to get that kind of sense of his. Get inside his head, if you like, and using the light and not using flash and trying to use that flare. You know, flare is a difficult thing to control if one can control it, but it's just trying to, I don't know, isolate him somewhere and show his thoughts and use the light.
Love
in
it.
That way.
Love it. Here's another great one with the light. Early morning light on the track and...
Yeah, that's in Valencia testing last year. And it's, again, now it's trying to show that loneliness, much with the Barcelona one previously, of you know, them pounding around trying to get their car sorted before the first Grand Prix of the season. And it's something that's so fantastic about digital, that where it's come to the photographer, I think, the creative photographer who understands how to work on Photoshop. I don't mean putting wildebeest in the background, but I just mean that, you know, not faking anything, if you like, but bringing something extra to the picture. And
what did you nudge here? What did you do here?
Well, you shoot the shot. If you saw the raw file of that, obviously there would be detail in the background and some right. detail in the foreground. But one, you know, through use of curves and layers and levels and all this stuff, just makes it more monotone, brings yeah. up the contrast.
And that beautiful S, yeah.
Yeah, and that shape, you know, that I really struggled with that shape because the barrier is right behind me, so I'm trying to get as far away. And that's somewhere where I really wanted to zoom in, because you just want a little bit more space, but you're craning your neck trying to get as much of that S effecting as possible.
Right, and yet flattening it, so you get this the silhouette of the trees and then the second layer behind that. Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. And trying to get the car in the right place, hoping that he doesn't kiss the edge of the viewfinder, the frame.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that come in.
It's a sport in itself, taking pictures of F1.
Yes, it is.
It is a sport.
Especially without a zoom.
Amazing. One last. Yeah. We already saw this one, but this is a good example of light again, using the instant.
Well, as I say, that's trying to steal the flashes
stealing
of the other
flash.
Guys.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, here
and all
you're
those.
On-
Sorry, Cassie.
Do you carry flash with you? And what do you carry? What's in your bag? And how do you travel with it?
I don't carry a flash. I just got to the point where I'm so rarely using it. And obviously, airlines don't like a lot of weight these days. So I'm trying to get your kit down as low as possible in weight-wise.
You got one big-ass lens. That's all you have room for.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You hide it when you check in.
But, what is that? Is that a cannon? I'm sorry, sir. You can't bring bazookas on the plane.
Thank yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's what I carry. Typically at a Grand Prix, I carry the two cameras, a 600, a 200, and then the lenses that I have are a 14, 15, 20, 24, 24 shift, 35, 50, 85, 90 shift, 135, 200, 600, and 1.4 and two times converters. But you wouldn't take all of those lenses up, so you'd never be able to stand up if you carried them all. So you tailor what your kit is
right.
to the circuit or the picture that you want to get across. I might just randomly take a shift lens to a race or two a year. The fisheye take to one race a year because obviously it's an effect that can get incredibly boring after a while. I'm passe.
I haven't seen any shift photos that I could tell in here. So, but you do use that frequently?
Yeah, not frequently because I think it can become a bit cliched.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Places like Monaco is fantastic, or Singapore.
To bring something into photo, it's such a complex scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously with shift lenses, as you know, they work best on scenes to make it look like that kind of diorama, little monoset right. that you have as a kid. You want to get elevation, and it's difficult at a lot of Grand Prix to get elevation.
Right.
You can get that at Monaco and Singapore, and obviously you've got a lot of buildings and other cars and boats and things like that around. So, you know, you tailor it to
right.
You tailor your lens twist to the parameters that you're given at the races.
We did ask you what if you picked one lens, what you would pick, and you said the 51.2, which is an amazing lens.
Yeah, yeah, that's you know, when you ask me that question, I guess that would be the one that in the last couple of years I've bought since I bought it, I've used the most. It's
I love it.
It's got a fabulous out of focus
bokeh
effect, and it's really, you know.
But I can't imagine using this on the track at all.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, you do. You've shown pictures.
Oh, some of those shots of close-ups,
portrait, and behind the scenes.
Yeah,
inside the cockpit. Yeah.
And you also recommended the Leatherman multi-tool, not a lens.
Well, I have my that's in my bum bag, as we would say, or fanny pack, as I think you would call it.
Yeah.
You know, I have a little screwdriver set and a paint pen, and I have my Leatherman.
Always good. You never know when you're going to need a Leatherman. You can't bring it on the plane. That's the only problem.
I've lost a few because obviously you forget it's in your hand.
They take it.
Handbag. Yeah. They take it.
Yeah.
Speaking of bringing it on the plane, so all your gear, are you making sure it's checkable?
You don't check your gear.
I mean, carryable.
I'll let you into a little secret. It's which is not my own secret. Most of the photographers who shoot Formula One will work for teams or work for people within the sport who help us out in lieu of. There was lots of prints or favors. We'll lose our equipment in their freight, and we get to the next Grand Prix, especially the big lenses, basically. Because
sure, you don't want to carry that. Yeah,
you carry that. You can't take any clothes or
you could do what Scott Bourne does, which is wear a big vest and load it up. And then put it on the belt.
Could you imagine me showing up with a huge vest?
I know some guys who do that.
Sure. I do too.
Yeah. Rick Salmon does that too.
Rick probably does. I could see Rick doing that, I'll tell you.
So you have to tell us about the McLaren, the 1997.
Okay, but then we're going to run out of time, so do it quickly. Yeah.
Quick.
It was a foot pedal picture of an ingenious braking system that the team had. And we got a couple of pictures at a previous race and did a little bit of investigation. And found out that they were running a pretty trick, but completely legal system, and waited for the cars to break down, which they conveniently did at the next Grand Prix. I stuck my lens in the car and photographed their system, and obviously McLaren were far from happy about it. But
because
you revealed their secret.
It, and then the next 2 years, two teams had it, right?
Oh, dear.
They did, and then the system was banned,
You don't get much time. I wish I could show more of these images, but if you go to DarrenHeath.com, Tony, just put up a few of these. These are just so incredible. These images, so dramatic, so beautiful. It makes me want to go to the races. And I wish
I'll take you around.
I'm going to Monaco. I'm telling you, that's it. It's done. And so look at that. Isn't that a great shot?
Incredible.
Love that shot. That might be a little tilt, is it? I don't know. There's movement. I can't tell.
They're just
moving
shot
fast.
A very slow shutter speed to get that movement and show how many guys. Just look how many guys they used to have in that car.
Look at that. Wow.
And that would take six seconds, and he's gone.
Yep. And look at that. Talk about a shunt. Holy cow.
Yeah. So and Michael Schumacher didn't crash that much. So
that's Schumacher?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's the Ferrari. Wow. Such a pleasure meeting you, Darren. Catherine said, you're going to be really excited about this one, and I am. This is great.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
DarrenHeath.com if you want to know more. Follow him on Twitter, at F1 Photographer.
Yeah, and he's very active.
Does a lot of good stuff on Twitter. Yeah, it's really great.
And his blog as well.
More pictures, Tony. This stuff is so good. I can't. Is that Monza?
No, that's Monaco.
Monaco. Oh, man.
Who do you think is going to win 2012 in the Drivers' Championship?
Well, since I'm working with McLaren, obviously I hope that one of their cars.
Really? You're working for them? So they forgave you?
Yeah. Well, it just shows you, didn't it?
15 years later.
Yeah.
We'll hire him. Where is this?
That's Singapore. That's one of the views of, if not the view of the year. It's out of the Swiss hotels, one of the windows where you just try and get to know a guest or two and hope they'll let you lean out of their window.
And is that the track at Singapore?
Yeah.
Look at
that. That's the cars you can see down the bottom.
Oh, yeah. That'll give you an idea for people who are trying to figure out what this looks like. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's an amazing cool event.
I mean, to me, this is the look at that. Look at all those photographers.
All huge lenses.
Oh,
all
my.
White.
So nice to meet you, Darren.
Yeah, Darren. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, a real thrill. A real pleasure. Love the images. Look at this one. Mm-hmm. We won't tell them we talked about it. Look at that one.
That's amazing.
That's a wind tunnel at McLaren.
You don't even see the person right at first.
Look at that. That's not the new braking system. That's a wind tunnel.
No, they wouldn't let me shoot that this time.
Thank you, Darren.
I love how the photographer figures it out.
Yeah.
There's
something about this.
Braking system.
So cool.
Doesn't look right.
Look at this. This is a great shot.
He uses the soft focus so much to show that color by blurring it and making it about the color, not the objects.
I just love how, just everything. Just beautiful photography. Thank you, Darren. Darren is, again, DarrenHeath.com. We'll say goodbye again. Next week, who do we talk to next week?
Well, next week you're going to be at CES.
Oh, PMA. Yes, so maybe we'll do a little, I don't know what we'll do. We won't do a show next week.
Yes, yeah, so I think next week we don't have a show.
We don't have a show, but PMA is next week, so we're going to talk a lot about cameras. So make sure you watch our coverage from CES from all week long, and we'll make sure we do some camera stuff.
And there might be some big announcements from Canon, hopefully.
I'm wondering, fingers PMA, crossed. That might be the Mark III. Look at this one. This is great.
One can hope. Mm.
Thanks for joining us. We do this show every Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern at twit.tv. You can watch live. Join us in the chat room. We try to get questions from the chat room in for our photographers as well, and we usually do. But you can also watch after the fact. We have audio and video versions available at twit.tv. Just go to the Twit Photo section. If you missed any shows, watch them all.
Just watch them.
Every one of them. If you love art, if you love photography, if you love sport, whatever it is, you'll find something to love with the shows. It's just incredible. Look at this one. I love this shot. I'm just keeping going. I can't stop going through these pictures.
Can't stop, Leo.
Look at them. They're gorgeous. Oh, champagne. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twit Photo. Makes me want to go to Monaco.
I'm not getting my hopes up with
When's
you.
Monaco, Darren?
It's always in this, about the last weekend of May.
Perfect. We could go to the Kentucky Derby or we could go to Monaco. Horses or cars, which will it be?
I think it's got to be horses.
Would you ever think maybe I should be a horse photographer, horse race photographer?
I've shot horse racing. And,
that's fun too.
Yeah, it is. I was surprised at the power and the...
It is. It's incredible,
if you're down
right?
there, it's probably very similar.
Yeah. Really, I was quite impressed with it. I didn't do much of it, but enjoyed what I did.
I would imagine some of the skills translate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Races are a little shorter.
Yeah, they don't come around in many laps.
You get one shot. Whenever you are...
Yeah, I'm ready.
Tony, how are we feeling here? Are we feeling it? It seems to be a pup in the background.
Just a dog.
The dog standing there.
There's a dog in his.
He's an F1 fan.
Is he?
I think he's just going to stay there. What are you looking at, Ozzy?
Is he part of the show?
Yeah, he's stuffed.
You know what? It looks like stuffed dog.
It's a stuffed dog.
Stuffed Ozzy.
You see, though, he's actually a show dog.
He's compositionally perfect. I know you're leaning.
He is. No, he has excellent.
Look at his poise.
A good stance.
Look at that. Yeah. No, he's a natural.
Very upright.
Oh,
there he goes. Okay.
Ozzy,
he's going to stand on the other side. It's okay.